There's only so much we can fit in 1 hour, but we are just getting started. So pour another cup of coffee. It's the Political Power After Hour. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
What are they calling it now? The After Hours? Power, Political Power After Hours?
I love that. Yeah, why not? Makes it sound like it's late night, though. Let's pretend it's late night. Jeremy Janine joining me in studio in a special new time.
Top of the hour.
Top of the hour for top of the morning. Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com. So many things to talk about, and you and I have done this for a while now. We'll look back and then we'll sort of look forward. But the looking back is the role, the performance of the Milwaukee Election Commission, counting the ballots. Now, we had the shortage issue, which I think a lot of people were, you know, either they use that as an excuse to bash Milwaukee, which they like to do, or they say, come on, you know, what's going on here? So when you look back at this from a journalist perspective, what do you make of the performance of the Milwaukee Election Commission on what they actually got accomplished on Tuesday night?
The results came in earlier than expected.
Yes.
So that's a win. There was no questions on integrity. That's a win. Bad snafu on 7 polling places out of 180 running low or out of ballots.
So this is not unique to them. It's happened before. It's happened in other big, even bigger elections, presidential elections. It happens. The turnout surprises people. Now, someone who used to run a city and knew this issue, I don't know that we ever ran out, but because we were, my city clerk, Catherine Risky, was always very well prepared for almost any race that we had and had to conduct in the city. There's a cost to municipality. You have to print the ballots in the paper costs and all that stuff. And then it's sort of a guessing game. But I always told my clerk and other people who would listen that, you know, being overprepared and anticipation of what might happen is probably a good thing because it saves you embarrassment. Will the Milwaukee Election Commission suffer any embarrassment from the fact that they ran out momentarily?
Well, they suffered embarrassment that night and an otherwise clean night for them. But there is a chance that continues to rear its head because a number of council members have called for a presentation from Paulina Gutierrez, the executive director, on what happened. As you got to the cost of the ballots, yes, there is a cost to print every additional ballot. I'm going to be interested to know, like, what is going forward? Let's just print 10% more than whatever we think every single time. What is that actual cost? There's 150,000 or so people that voted. What? Another 15,000 pieces of paper, what's that cost?
Yeah, and it's different. I can tell it's different all over the place. And, you know, for those people who love paper ballots, this is certainly something you have to think about. And, you know, the rise, decades old now, of electronic voting, I think, is something that a lot of states are looking at. And the cool thing about, maybe not cool, is that across the country, states, municipalities, they all do it differently. I forgot the state off the top of my head, but one of the states has all mail-in voting. It's like
Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. It's like, I don't know, it seems to have worked for them. And I guess if we're afraid of technology, we're going to continue to have these kinds of questions when you have a paper ballot printed.
One of the interesting things that happened last Tuesday was technology actually was one of the things that saved the day. Rather than wait for all those paper ballots to be delivered, the city was able to deploy what's called its express vote machines, which is a machine, if you early vote in the city of Milwaukee, you're going to be familiar with. It prints a paper ballot, but first you cast your ballot essentially digitally on a computer, and then it prints it out.
Yeah,
they're the accessibility devices for people that need issues or that have mobility issues, but they're also great for early voting because then you can go to any polling place, and if your ballot is different across the city of Milwaukee, often it is, this can just print off whatever the appropriate ballot is for you.
So for Gutierrez, having conducted, I believe, the November election and now this spring election, there were some concerns earlier that maybe she wasn't qualified enough. I think she's sort of demonstrated that. We've had some slight snafus that we've talked about, but for the most part, the votes are being counted and things are moving along.
Yeah, the big concern was experience over qualifications, and she has certainly now gained experience. The issue that happened in November wasn't directly her issue. It was a deputy who is no longer with the department, although I don't know why the person is no longer with the department. They're from Madison. But this is a minor blip, but if it's a pattern that continues, it's going to draw concern. But my guess is it's something we'll forget about in a couple of years.
And I'm going to make a speech here because I want to, and I'm curious about, from your journalist perspective, what you think about it. This is an opportunity now for the legislature to finally, once and for all, say, let them count the ballots that come in. You're not releasing the results. You're just counting the ballots. Florida has done this now for a decade and a half. It seems to work well. Stop making it harder for the big cities like Milwaukee and other big cities and other states to do the job that has to be done. You got to count them, but if you can accurately count them, not in a hurried pace where you have maybe the likelihood of an error or counting error or some other mistake that could be critically important in the results of an election. This is the time for the legislature, and it's not that much of an outlier. Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator. Last time I checked, one of the most conservative senators in the government, and certainly our senior senator in Wisconsin, endorses the idea. From a journalist's perspective, it seems like a no-brainer to me.
Well, my wife certainly endorses the idea because I would get home earlier on election
night. Right.
What you're talking about is the absentee ballots. The cities have them in hand,
yeah.
And they can't do anything until polls open on election day. There was a proposal that died in the state Senate last time, I believe the assembly passed it, to allow the day before, hey, maybe you can open those ballots up. You can, don't put them through machines, just open them up, flatten them out. You save all kinds of time. You lower the stress level on election day. We saw not just Milwaukee, but Oak Creek had problems on election night that things just took longer. Well, if they could have started earlier, it probably wouldn't drag into the middle of the night.
And I, Robin Voss gets blamed for a lot of things, but I think this one fell on Senate Leader Lemahieu.
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's your opportunity. You're not often handed ideas, laws, legislation, good ideas that are bipartisan. This is bipartisan. And, you know, as much as you want to have the war in, of politics and owning the other side, which is, God, I was sick of that 20 years ago, and I'm really even more sick of it now. That seems to be, you know, baked into our politics in the state of Wisconsin. And for whatever reason, maybe it's just the people that do the jobs. This is an easy one. It's not heavy lifting. Get it done. I mean, what's the problem here?
I'm very unclear on why there is opposition to this. I get there are concerns about, like, oh, they're going to know the results before. No, you put in the safeguards. You can't run the ballots through machines, but you can stack them up, flatten them out, make sure the machines are working, get all these things done, lower the stress level.
Last point before we go to break, and I'm going to talk about MPS. New superintendent, by the way. Look, I spent a few minutes talking about the Gableman situation now, giving up his law license for 3 years. Should have been a lifetime ban, but, you know, do what you got to do. And how that was a complete sort of validation of what I said at the beginning, that was a complete waste of time and money, taxpayer money, which, I don't know, $2 million plus we could have used for something else. But, you know, whatever your favorite thing is the government does for you. But now I see a couple elections, more than that, more a few elections that have seemed to have gone very well, regardless of the winner. We've had Republicans win, Donald Trump for president. We've had liberal candidates win for, you know, superintendent of public instruction and the Wisconsin Supreme Court on a couple occasions now. Maybe we actually, we're doing it okay. We're doing an okay job on elections.
I have full confidence in Wisconsin's elections actually working, despite all the mud we throw at the walls to make it seem terrible.
And maybe my message is stop letting the idiots win the day. Quick break. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great work. MPS, new superintendent, after this. Hour number two, political power hours, or after hours, as they like to say, pretending that it's midnight here in Milwaukee. But it's not. It's 1017 on 620 WTMJ, joining me in studio, as he often does, from UrbanMilwaukee.com. Very talented writer and a good guy. Jeremy Janine joined me. All right, let's talk about MPS. Lots going on with the MPS. We have brand new superintendent. What's her name?
Brenda Caselius.
And so what's the news from MPS? What am I going to like to hear?
There are changes afoot, and they're not just at the superintendent. The superintendent has come in and immediately made a personnel change.
She whacked somebody.
For
figuratively speaking.
Figuratively. Well, we'll get to my reference in a moment. But Sean Kane, who is the facilities manager, who the state came in and fined for not having a valid architecture license and representing himself like he did. It was expired.
Bit of a problem.
He had one at some point. He has the training. They fined him $1,300. Well, he is now, and I'm doing air quotes, separated from the district. That was the district's term. They would not confirm if he resigned or was terminated. But he is gone. The MPS had a press conference with two school board members in attendance, the mayor in attendance, and the health department in attendance, because they have this lead crisis that just continues to unfold.
Which should have been solved 20 years ago. I said it last week.
In journalism, I attend these press conferences that I consider drugs on the table press conference. And what I mean by that is in the case of where the reference comes from, the police department shows that here are drugs we seized. We are doing something.
Right.
The federal government, when it does raids, is really good at that. What I didn't expect was a new superintendent to come in and have a head on a pike press conference right away.
Yeah.
Which was, I am making a change. This person is gone. I'm committed to addressing this issue. And then for the health commissioner, a city employee, not an MPS employee, Michael Tortiardis, to say, yeah, this change was entirely warranted. I'm sorry someone lost their job, but we need to go in a different direction.
That speaks to serious levels of accountability. One, in what you're supposed to be doing, how you're supposed to maintain your resume and your credentials. And two, in the work that you do and the fact that she came in, she thanked him for his 25 years of service. But, like, you're out of here. We're going to get this stuff done. And for those of us who talk about MPS, and I don't do it as much as some of the other talking heads or squawking heads, whatever term you want to use, I'm not here to bash MPS. My brother is a teacher in MPS, and I know a lot of people who work in and around MPS. And there's a hope, and hopefully not a hope and a prayer, that we figure things out and we educate our kids. And I've talked long time about the fact that I think we need to get back to basics in MPS, because that sort of gives you a platform and infrastructure to succeed in life. I mean, it's great to have all the extracurriculars and all that stuff, but boy, having those basics. But what I like about this early move in MPS is it signals that this superintendent is serious and committed to making changes, to make changes in this really important school district, largest in the states.
She's committed to making changes, but she's also bringing in someone from the city that ran the lead program at the city. So not only is she pushing someone out the door, but bringing in someone with expertise, which I think says a lot.
And she called the mayor, which I don't know what the relationship of the previous superintendents with the mayor. I'm sure they talk, but I love the fact she called Mayor Cavalier Johnson to get support.
She made it clear. She goes, I came from Boston. I'm used to being in a school district that's run by the mayor. That's not the case in Milwaukee. But she said that was one of the first calls she made on this issue. And the mayor allocated resources in terms of this health department leader.
Yeah, I love it. I don't want to leave this issue without talking about the fact that some of the changes that are happening in Washington, D.C. can impact this. And again, my baseline is this should have been dealt with decades ago. It's not good. It's not healthy. It's not safe. And it has long-term mental implications, educational implications for the children that it impacts, and probably adults, now that we're talking about a decades-long problem. The fact that this recent decision-making by the Trump administration could hamper some of the abatement work that's going on here.
Robert F. Kennedy, the head of Health and Human Services, let go of a team of people that were assisting the city, because these abatement projects, the city doesn't actually perform the work, but it goes in and does swabbing and it does other testing to figure out, okay, what is the level of lead contamination? Do we need to act? And there was a team from the National, from the Health and Human Services, that were all terminated in the middle of helping the city of Milwaukee address this issue. And it's just one of the many changes. They weren't terminated by DOGE. They're terminated within the Health and Human Services Department. But just one of many changes that is going to make it more difficult for local governments to act.
Yeah, and again, as much as we've talked about this issue, I need results. I need results from the Wisconsin legislature. I need results from the governor of Wisconsin. I need results from Congress. I need results from the president of the United States and his administration. Because, again, this should not be continuing to be a problem in 2025 when we knew about this issue, God, 50 years ago?
They banned lead paint in 1978.
So. My God. Almost 50 years ago. Jeremy Janine, we'll take a quick break here. Lots more to get to, including, I don't know if it's a new proposal for 794, but a slimmed down proposal?
We have refined design.
Oh, is that what they're calling it? All right, Jeremy Janine, after this.
Take the highway. Take the highway.
Jazz will have to tell me who this artist is. I was going to say Marshall Tucker Band, but is it? Oh, still got the ear for Marshall Tucker. MTB, as we used to call him. I probably saw him in concert 10 times back in the 80s and 90s. Jeremy Janine, who probably has never seen the Marshall Tucker Band in concert, I would guess.
I have not.
Yeah. From Urban Milwaukee is great work. How do folks find out your great work there?
UrbanMilwaukee.com and on all the social media platforms.
Yeah, and they're really good at local reporting and beyond. They some great people working there. All right. I haven't talked about it in a while. The 794, obviously a hot topic. What to do with it, that little spur between the lake and the Marquette. There's some new options, apparently.
So they are refined options. What's happening now is the state, it was a little over a year ago, or about a year ago, threw out like 8 or 9 concepts. They've now taken feedback and refined it down to 4. I would argue there's really only 2 if you want to keep track of
it. And the 2 are?
The 2 are slimming it down, and especially at the eastern end by the Hohen Bridge. It's extra wide because there's supposed to be this big interchange. Yeah. It's no longer there. They would also remove some of the on and off ramps like Milwaukee and Broadway. And then the other option is making it a boulevard essentially from the Marquette interchange the whole way to the Hohen Bridge. And so that
with lights or just open? I mean, open traffic, or would they have stoplights? Probably not, right?
They would be similar to looking at McKinley Avenue. Mm-hmm. So the question is, well, how are those stoplights timed? What does that boulevard actually look like? And the state has now released in a stakeholder meeting, and this is how I got access, a tipster provided it to us, these draft plans. And they're still soliciting feedback. City engineer Kevin Muse has made it clear that they're asking lots of questions of the state, and that's why this process is dragged on. They want to know about, you know, questions like traffic timing and what does the state think? What does the city think? There's the big question of right now, 794, it's elevated freeway through downtown. It goes over the river on a elevated freeway. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to open and close it. It's high enough. Right. Well, if you make a boulevard, you're going to need to open and close it.
Yep.
Well, how often do you actually need to open and close it? And then if you want to get way into the weeds, and I'll save this for your Thursday show with the attorneys and judges that come on, the Northwest Territory that established Wisconsin governs that waterways get priorities over roads and all kinds of stuff there.
That always drives me nuts because I, you know, just not to make it personal, but I go west on Michigan Avenue from the lakefront in the morning. And if the lights are often screwed up, we got the hops in there and that can they take over the lights. And that normally a 3 minute trip can take like 10 minutes sometimes. And you throw, you know, a ship coming through or a boat coming through. That's not the way we should move traffic, in my opinion.
The question is, how much traffic are we really moving through the entire end-to-end? And it's
I'm just talking about me.
All right, so Steve needs to get here by 8:50 to be getting on the air by 9, so we can time the street.
I don't want
to
wait at lights.
So I think that is a big question. That intersection everyone hates, we talked about it about a month ago, that off-ramp.
Yeah.
Under any scenario, that gets entirely rebuilt. That's gone.
That has to happen.
Because the state's essentially admitting they made a mistake there. There will be public meetings on this, chance for people to make their input heard. But if you're looking for more right now, urbanmilwaukee.com, search for Interstate 794.
And they're also asking for feedback on some of their other ideas about sort of limiting or reducing traffic deaths. And this is an important issue.
Yeah, Vision Zero, there's a draft plan right now. The idea is eliminating all traffic deaths, not just drivers, but pedestrians, cyclists. The city has 7 strategies and 100 action items. They want your feedback on what's the most important.
All right. I'm off next Tuesday, so we'll see you in a couple weeks.
See ya. Enjoy Vegas.
I will. Las Vegas, everybody. I'm looking forward to it because here's my scenario. I'm going to be watching the Masters, maybe gambling on the Masters, and then everything else that Vegas offers with my lovely wife, Kathy, and our friends, our travel companions. So we're going to have fun. Jerry Maginine, always great. UrbanMilwaukee.com.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since.
Here's the wild thing about this. So Jazz plays this. I was singing this during the break. I don't know why. I think Jazz said, she said train for some reason. Keep the train rolling. And then I started singing the song, and then he brings it back with Johnny. She brings it back with Johnny Cash.
There you go. Kristen Bride,
you're in the afternoon. Why are you here?
Because you asked me to be here.
Oh, that's right.
Because you got 2 hours.
You know why you're here?
Can you still know how to fill 2 hours?
I could fill 5 hours and would do so if asked, because I'm a team player.
We never really get to talk about this. Do you think you could have pulled off what Cory Booker did last week?
Yeah.
You think you could stand and talk for 25 hours?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I've stayed up for 38 hours, so I can do it.
But that's...
That's driving, too.
But he's driving and delivering a speech the same?
Yeah. Keep in mind, his speech was written down. He's not just, like, you know, going off the cuff. It was written down.
At least he didn't read from the encyclopedia.
True, which has been done before many times.
Which is what Strom Thurmond did, right? And he also was allowed to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Different rules. Also, his messaging was not as good as Cory Booker's, in my opinion. So one of the reasons, there's a couple things we're going to do, but you don't know this is coming. So
I don't. I asked you this morning what we're talking about.
Yeah, prepare yourself.
Said, just take my lead.
So somebody said,
trust we have.
Somebody that listened to us on Friday, I was on your show Thursday and Friday, I believe, last week, Spanning the State, 1 to 3 in the afternoons, right now. They said, who's Kristen Bride? Because they're not like a regular listener.
And did they email you that?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I said, well, she's done a show for, I don't know, how long you've done the show, a year?
It's been a little over a year.
Yeah, yeah. Span the States. You talk about a lot of things. It's sort of state focused.
Mm-hmm.
But our story actually goes back years, like 4 years. Because I saw your work on social media, at which you are brilliant, by the way.
It's 2020.
Yeah. And I said, that's somebody that I want to at least talk to. So I slid into your DM.
You did slide, in not a creepy way.
Yeah, which I don't really do anyway, because I hate messages. Matter of fact, that's something we're going to talk about too. You guys text too much. You, Makashans, I'm not used to texting that much.
Because you're a boomer.
Oh my God. So what, why the insult?
I don't think that's an insult. I think it's just a fact as far as my mother, you, a lot of people in that age range did not grow up using their thumbs like this. And you probably don't have the stress on this ligament in your thumb like I do.
Hands are really
good.
That
is very tight because I spend way too much time on my phone or the neck problems that I have.
I would answer the, who is Kristen Bry question by simply saying she's a brilliant teammate that I love to work with and knows kind of what she's talking about on most issues and does her homework, has a great communications background in a lot of different ways, a lot of different jobs and experience, and sort of tells a great story that's more in tune with how maybe new technology is taking us. Is that like sort
that's
of
fair?
Yeah. But how would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself, well, I mean, in my bio or whatever, I'm a radio host, I'm a columnist, I'm a video creator that tries to add humor and context to complicated news stories.
I would agree with that assessment.
And so what's really funny is I don't think I've told this story on air before, but if you remember last year when the new lineup was announced, there were certain, we'll say, right-leaning news outlets that kind of made me the poster child of the new direction WTMJ was going in. Because if anyone's listened to me, I think it's not a shock to, I lean left. And I have family that lives in Pewaukee. And I went over there that weekend after kind of the news broke. And my aunt said, "You've been all over my Facebook." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And there was lots of people who had lots of thoughts about me getting this job.
Everybody has thoughts.
And one of the comments she said she read was, "Who is this girl? She just kind of popped up out of nowhere. Who's her dad?" And that's a big joke in our family because my actual dad, for years, because of his time on the Badgers and the different business things, all of his other four siblings constantly lived under his shadow of being like, "Are you related to Pete Bry?"
He's a famous guy.
The joke was, Pete Bry. But Pete Bry has no pull in the media world anymore.
No, he doesn't.
So I did not get these jobs because of my dad.
That's good. And I think that's the right way to look at it. You're good at what you do. And I think one of the things I love about working with you is you look at issues, sometimes very serious, complex issues, in a different way than I do. And it's why we do the You Need to Listen podcast, because we're able to explore things. So many podcasts are one host or two hosts who essentially both sort of feel the same way. We disagree on stuff. And again, I want to tell people it's not absolute. Like I wouldn't do a podcast if we're always going to disagree. Sometimes we may agree on something. There's nuance to everything. And when we're talking about issues that matter to people's lives, which is kind of what we do on this station, we don't bloviate on behalf of parties. We don't bloviate on behalf of political candidates or elected officials. Because frankly, look, I know those outlets are popular. It's just a waste of time. What do you like? Sit there and nod your head to everything they say because you like it? How does that like do anything to your brain matter? It's like a waste of your time. Go do something else because I can guarantee if you go tomorrow, they'll be saying the same damn things that they said the day you missed.
There you go.
All right. I'm not telling you about any of the rest of the stuff we're talking about this half hour because I want to surprise you with all the topics.
All right.
Now this is something you sent me. I want to ask you about.
Okay.
And whether this will catch up.
I sent you a lot of things, so that could be. That didn't really narrow it down.
You, Makashin, and Zepecki, like 5,000 texts last year from you guys.
You counted?
I deleted all of them, the old texts. And I saw because here's a little tip for all of you on your smartphone. Clean your smartphones. You don't have to keep all this stuff. If you delete stuff, it goes to a recently deleted batch for, I think, 120 days or something, 90 days. But you're going to see the actual number of how many times someone texted you. It's so enlightening. 5,000, maybe it's 6,000.
Do you text anyone more than you text the
three of us? I don't even like
texting. Not even your kids?
I rarely text my kids. I don't even like texting. Texting's stupid. Kristen Bry, yours truly, Steve. Bonus hour this week. And by the way, stay tuned. Oh, sailing through the second hour of Political Power Hours. My friend and teammate, Kristen Bry, joining me in studio. All right, so you sent me this text this morning. I still haven't been able to prove that this is correct, that Fabletics, this sort of a leisure company, clothing, shoes, accessories, has now what they're calling a tariff tax, apparently in response to the actions of the president.
You think it's
I've seen some people say it's not true, but, you know, whatever. I think this is something we might see. Because and I actually went back to the, remember the pandemic when restaurants were adding this, you know, sort of pandemic charge for all the things they had to do, all the equipment, PPE, remember all that stuff?
Yep.
So one, do you think the story's real? And two, do you expect, as someone who kind of looks at all this stuff, that we're going to see more of this?
So we should probably explain more what it was. So one of the, is it Crescentine? How do you pronounce their last name? It's brothers who, they're behind Midas Touch and like anti-Trumpers. They had tweeted out a photo of a screenshot of someone who bought from Fabletics, which is like Athleta or Lululemon.
Yeah.
And there was a line on it under taxes, like the tariff fee.
Yeah.
And it was $44 based on, it was like shipping, zero, taxes, X, tariff, $44. And the question being like, is this, are we going to see more of this if and when the tariffs stay for companies to justify prices going up? Which I think is actually a smart thing for companies to be that kind of transparent. Now, I had not done, I saw it and I sent it to you guys. I'm happy I didn't repost it because I try to be
because you can careful. Make anything look real
because you saw what happened yesterday with the one false tweet that led to a $4 trillion market move because journalists and a bunch of people didn't verify whether or not it was true.
My bigger points here, that's why words matter. When you say stuff, especially when the president of the United States, now today he's talking about implementing some stuff at, I guess, at midnight against China, so we have a rebound going on today on the markets, which I think those of us who are heavily invested in the markets love to see, because we've taken a beating in the last week and whatever. But now the president's going to go re-up his efforts to sort of inject himself into this conversation, which is a real conversation. Whatever you think about tariffs, there are inequities built into the system of how we do things with other countries in the world. But I would argue this president, one, is not smart enough to figure this stuff out. He's not a guy who has a lot of economic background when it comes to the sort of the impact of tariffs, what they actually mean, what they are, how they influence markets. And then to do it in the willy-nilly way he's approaching it, which is sort of the IE, the whole way that they're doing everything, is a lot of surface-level stuff, saying stuff, not doing the homework, not doing the data research, the analytics, all the stuff that actually gives you a sound decision. This is why this stuff drives me nuts. But when I see stories like this, it does give me pause that we have to start thinking about how we communicate at the highest level down to what we do. And so I pulled back on that story because I was actually going to do it today, and I did a little bit of talking about it. Whether or not this is real, and this is sort of a long-winded response to what you just said, when you have AI and the ability to create and manufacture or craft almost anything that looks real, this is where it gets really dangerous, because words, posts, actions can have significant impact on our daily lives and can ruin people's lives, and some of it might not be true. That's a huge story, in my opinion.
Whether what's which part? The part, fact whether or not
it
it's
looks
true?
Real, but we don't know. Right now, I do not know.
Who's saying it's not? Because I didn't see any reporting that people are saying it's not real.
I don't have it up. I had it up early on the screen, but a lot of people are saying the story is manufactured.
Well, did Fabletics say something?
I haven't seen a comment from Fabletics.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but then I'm going to pull back on it because I don't know.
But that's a smart thing. That's the way that it should be handled. I mean, that's the thing I feel like where we're moving now is the burden is on all of us as information consumers to verify something before we share it, retweet it. Did I share this with you as far as I was talking to someone who studies misinformation, disinformation, partisanship, that one of the things that social media companies could do that would immediately cut down on the fire of misinformation and disinformation is, and without having to do fact checking, without having to censor anyone, take away the reshare button.
I didn't see that.
I didn't post it. I thought, I didn't know if I told you about this.
No.
This was a conversation that I had with someone. It's like,
if
you take away the ability for something to go so easily go viral by sharing it to your Instagram story, by reposting it on X, by all the different on sharing it on Facebook. So you can still consume it, but your ability to amplify it gets shut down. And so you're not really infringing on anyone's free speech, but the things that are emotionally charged sometimes are not telling the whole story or are just outright false.
Yeah.
And so stopping the ability for that to spread so quickly could solve a lot of our problems.
And the real life version of that is, somebody told me a long time ago, and I don't remember who it was, just when you're fired up about something, pause for a second, think about what you're going to say, use your brain, your experience, all your tenure, if you're talking about a job or a workplace situation, and then say what you're going to say.
Like the emotional regulation we teach toddlers.
Exactly.
Take a breath.
That's a good one.
Count to 10.
Yeah, absolutely. That's your mom voice. That's very good. Kristen Bride joining us. All right, rapid fire after this, okay? Ready?
Okay.
All right, you don't know what's coming with
I
that
do not.
Either. All right, quick break as we wrap the second hour of the PPH.
I did it.
Oh, I love that song. Frank Sinatra. All right, quick rapid fire. Kristen Bride for 2 minutes. If your smartphone wouldn't allow you to make phone calls, actual phone calls, would you miss it?
No, because I mostly just text and I do everything.
How
but
many
text
times do you text
phone?
A day? More than 100 or more than 500?
More than 100. I don't think it's more than 500.
That's crazy. You know how many times I text a day? 5. Mostly to you and
Bill. That's
why Bill
you don't have
a
strained thumb ligament.
All right, another rapid fire. Brewers? Bucks, Packers, which is your favorite? You can't take forever to
Sorry,
think
Sorry,
rapid fire.
Packers, Bucks, Brewers, yeah. But Bucks and Packers very close.
No, pick one.
Packers.
Why?
Nostalgia. I think growing up in our house is just there's so much wrapped up in my mom and Packer Sundays and yeah.
You were a hooper. Could
I
you,
was.
Could you play? Right now,
I told Brandon Snide yesterday, I would beat him at horse.
You said that to Brandon?
I could not beat Ben Brust, but I would put myself against
You're
most people.
You're not going to beat
could,
Ben Brust.
No, I said I wouldn't beat Ben Brust, but I would. There's most. I think I would fare very well in a game of horse against most people we work with.
I almost beat Mike Dunleavy, former coach of the Bucks, in a game of horse until he took it seriously. He started doing behind the basket shots. I was making every shot that he made.
Really?
Yeah, 10 in a row.
You made 10 shots in a row?
Yeah, he goes, damn, you got some skills.
I didn't know that about you.
I have a picture of the actual events. Okay. It's on my wall in my office at home.
All right.
Last one. Who's your favorite teammate?
You.
Was that sort of a, that was teed up for me there. How about that? Well, you know, for all those folks who say, you said it. Now, if other people say it too, you might actually have something here. All right. Thanks for sitting in.
You're going to be with me tomorrow.
Yeah, not right away because like I said
no,
I, 1:30
to 2.
I have very important business to take care of at 1, but I will get there as soon as I can. You're on from 1 to 3 today. Do you know what you're talking about today?
Today we have a fun show. So we have it's Giving Tuesday, so we're going to highlight a student at University of Wisconsin Eau Claire who is working towards fighting food insecurity for students on campus. We're going to be talking to Joe Tucker, who is starting a Panther Fund for UWM athletes for the NIL.
Proud Panther, by the way.
Yeah, he played with my brother because my brother was on the basketball team when Bruce Pearl was still here.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know your brother played.
He walked on.
Could you beat him in horse?
Probably not.
All right, we got to get out of here. Kristen Bride, spanning the states. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll hear you tomorrow, too.